And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 711. It is that time of the year. It is 2025, so we kick off our team previews for the third straight year. As usual, I ask most of the returners to come back and do the teams if they can, and we will kick it off in the Bronx. The defending American League champion, New York Yankees. You can find this individual on Twitter at BreakingBen_T and joins me once a week already, as it is, but doing a little bit different of a show today. The one and only Ben Tidd. How we doing, my friend?
Doing well, Bubba. This is the closest thing I'll ever have to a doubleheader because we recorded last night and I'm right back at it Friday afternoon. Yep. But yeah, it'll come out Monday for everyone, I think. And yep. You probably should have got someone else besides me to start off the series because it's the same boring voice, but I always love coming on for the Yankee show. It's actually my third year doing this as well. Yep. So it's always an honor, especially when I wasn't really a podcaster when you first had me on the first time to do it. It was awesome. And I'm glad to be back again.
No, I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, they had a very successful season last year. And just for reference, Ben said he's done it all 3 years. I want to say it's like at least 80% of the teams will be a three-peat unless something changes. I'm still working on finalizing that, but I know last year it was almost like 90%. I only had like one or two changes last year. The goal is to keep it similar, and I like having the voices, like having the people that actually enjoy the team but also know what they're talking about with the team. So that's kind of the fun behind it all. I think Ben, myself, many others, we could probably talk about any team in reality. That's just because we do so much fantasy baseball. But this gives kind of an inside voice, and we'll have some fun with that, of course. So for people that may be new to the team previews, I will not say this every episode, but we go through basically the potential starting nine or the top hitters fantasy relevant-wise to look at and highlight maybe some guys that aren't on the board, but guys that to talk about. Then they go starting pitching, relieving, prospects, end of story. That'll be the fun there. So kick it off, Ben. We'll start off with the big man, MVP type man, the one, the only, Aaron Judge, who since December 1st has an ADP of 3. He's gone as high as 2, as low as 6, obviously coming off an amazing season, Ben. Some of these guys just kind of speak for themselves, not a whole lot to add, but what are your thoughts on Judge entering 2025? Because to me, I guess the only surprising part if people are kind of sleeping on this one, he's going to be 33. He's not like he feels like he's young, but he's not as young as people think.
Right. Yeah. He was a late major leaguer. I think he was probably like 25 when he got called up. So most prospects now seem like to be 20, 21, at least the big ones that seem to be hitting or hit the ground running, so to speak. Yeah. I mean, I think I've yet to draft Judge in all the leagues I've played. I don't know if I've ever had him on a team, and I'm definitely down to take him again. Well, at least not again, but for once this year, I have him. I think it's my second. No, he's my third overall player, I think. And yeah, he's not much to say. He's arguably the best hitter in baseball. Probably like him, Shohei. Throw Witt in there. I mean, in terms of pure hitters, like it's like him and Yordan, I think, are like the best power average combos around. And yeah, you mentioned Judge's age. He's 33. He's kind of avoided the injuries the last few years, which kind of always hampered him a little bit earlier in his career. He had the fluky toe thing in LA 2 years ago. And it didn't stop him at all last year, so that was good to see. He never had surgery, so I'm pretty confident that that won't flare up again unless he runs to the wall again, but fingers crossed. So, yeah, I would feel pretty confident taking Judge in the top three, like I said, and just hope that he doesn't start declining yet because he's a big guy, and I could see him probably having a pretty big decline once it hits. I just don't think it's going to happen yet.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to draft Judge this season, I believe. I might have had one early pick, and I got to Witt. I have not had many early picks at all. I have a couple shares in Underdog, which is fun because he crushes there. He crushes everywhere, let's be real. But the big thing you mentioned, he's been healthy the last 2 years, where that was always like the if he's healthy, we know he's a monster. If he's not, then he crushes you. And last 2 years, he's been healthy. He's been a monster. So that's kind of the risk-reward, the gamble you have to take. And if we think back, most of the first round got hurt last year anyways. So it's time to start taking your chances, I guess, at least with a guy like Judge. It's a different chance than a chance on like an Ellie, which we talked about on the shortstop show. Different risk, I guess, involved there. Let's go to Jazz Chisholm Jr. The Yankees traded for Jazz last season. It's been the age-old thing we've said. If Jazz could ever stay healthy, dude's awesome. Well, we finally saw it, Ben. We finally saw it at his age 26 season, which, again, now he seems really young. It seems like we've been talking Vlad or Jazz forever, and we haven't. With 24 homers, 40 steals, 147 games played, and most of those were with the Marlins. Now he gets a full year in the Bronx, hopefully a full year again, barring health. And right now, if you want him, you got to pay for him, though. ADP is 26, as high as 18 since December 1st. How are we feeling on Jazz?
I like him. I love when they traded for him. He was a huge spark plug for them because they didn't have the fastest lineup before they acquired Jazz. And he really turned it up. So in his 101 games with the Marlins, he had 13 homers, 22 steals. But with the Yankees, he almost matched that in 46 games. He had 11 homers with the Yankees, so only two fewer, and just four fewer steals was 18. I don't think he's going to be able to sustain a roughly 30-60 pace like he did with the Yankees. But like the 2040 seems to be within reach for him to repeat again. He outdid that last year in terms of homers, at least. I think Steamer has him for 29 homers, which I think is a little high. He doesn't have the best underlying metrics. I mean, the barrel rate is almost 10%, so that's pretty good. Hits the ball on the ground a lot, still 49%. But with Jazz, well, also another positive I'll say, too, is that he's dual eligible, third and outfield. Yeah. Depending on what happens with the Yankees, he could maybe gain second base eligibility, too, because right now I think he's projected to be their second baseman. But he's kind of flexible where he could play second or third, so they could either sign someone for second or third or just leave it as is, and he'll gain second base within the first month, so that's even better. The one thing with Jazz, though, is the average is – so he's going in at the 2-3 turn, I think, usually. And unless you have if you go Witt and then Jazz, that's a lot of steals. That's a lot of things. But I guess Witt would kind of complement Jazz's low average a little bit. And just one thing from like a fan perspective, watching the Yanks in the playoffs last year, Jazz was horrible. I don't think anyone really brought it up, but I feel like every time he was up, he grounded out to first base. It was just a pretty poor showing in the playoffs. It was also his first playoff series or experience at all. But I don't know if that's going to affect him at all. But I think, and also too, he should hit second for the Yankees as of right now. He could even hit leadoff if Volpe struggles. So the lineup spot should be great for Jazz. And he only has one healthy season, so who knows if he can repeat again, especially how hard he plays. But if he goes back to the infield, maybe he'll stay healthy. But I think he was getting hurt as an infielder anyway. So who knows if that's even correlation or not. But yeah, I like Jazz. Just be careful with the average, like I said. And other than that, he should give you plenty of power and speed.
Yeah, and the only other thing that I would add on to that is hitting at the top of the Yankees order, he might actually get a 100-run season on his hands as well, which would be tremendous because it's still very, very good Yankees team. Yes, Juan Soto's gone, but we're about to talk about a handful of other guys. The Yankees have been quite active after not spending $750 million. They found a way to spread the wealth, one would say. So, yeah, I love Chaz. It's just the problem is like where he's going. Like you said, there's a lot of different pieces to the puzzle being put together at that time. And is he going to fit type thing? And he fits if you believe he plays 145 plus games. It's just you got to believe that. And then you got to have the batting average asset because that we've talked about it on our shows, Ben, and a lot of other people have said it. Batting average, and I'm going to bug people all offseason with saying this over and over, is so much better in the top of the draft, and it just dries up that there's a reason certain guys go early. So taking a Jazz that does not help your batting average early already kind of puts you behind the eight ball unless you adjust accordingly with like a Corey Seager or something else later on. So it's, again, roster construction, but something to definitely keep in mind if you're taking Jazz Chisholm. All right, next up on the docket here is the potential leadoff hitter, which we have differing opinions on, so that's really fun. For those who did not listen to the shortstop debate show, Anthony Volpe is projected to lead off for now for the New York Yankees. ADP of 141 since December 1st, as high as 118. I'm optimistic on him just because he'll be 24. I think he can develop. We saw 21-24 2 years ago. We saw 12-28 last year. He's played 159 games both years. Saw some improvements in the strikeout rates. Batting average went up. There's still some concerns that you can highlight again that were very, very on point. So I think Volpe's one of those ones that he could definitely take another step forward, but there's also a risk of step back. What do you got for Anthony Volpe?
Yeah, I mean, with Volpe, it really comes down to his lineup position because right now he's probably their leadoff hitter. But as I said on the shortstop show we did the other day, he doesn't really profile as a leadoff hitter because his career on base is .288, and that's not going to roll if you're hitting leadoff for the Yankees. It shouldn't, at least. I mean, they've had him there for a good decent amount of time in his young career, Volpe. And I mean, he scored 90 runs because of it last year. He hit first enough, and he got a lot of plate appearances as a result. But if you're getting 600 plus at bats of a .243 average, it's going to really bring down your team's average. So you almost don't want him to hit leadoff if he's going to hit that low, have that poor of an average. It's going to hurt your team, your fantasy team a lot. I mean, but then if he hits eighth or ninth, he's getting fewer plate appearances, fewer runs, fewer everything. It's not good either way. So he has to make a better, he has to be more of a true leadoff hitter, be more patient, make better contact, more contact, because he tried to cut down on the Ks last year and it worked, but the barrel rate was halved. I think more than halved. It went from 9% to 3.9%. The XBA was still pretty poor at 238. So he's definitely a volume play, but he's got to make sure that you can, if you do take a Volpe, make sure you can resist, I guess, the poor average that I expect to come along with it right now. Like he did improve by almost 40 points. Yeah. I mean, but he went from 209 to 243 in the average department last year. So it's definitely an improvement you like to see, but it's still pretty poor. And you did mention his age. He's only 23. He'll be 24, I think, next year. So he could take another leap forward for sure. But I'm pretty low in terms of ADP with Volpe, and I probably won't have him this year. I mean, maybe if he does fall to where I have him, I could. But he's not definitely not a target for me right now.
Yep, that's fair enough. It's definitely, you can either take the gamble on him improving again, or there are definite concerns with Anthony Volpe at that ADP, another shortstop we did talk about on the show. So go back and listen to episode 710. You'll get some guys that go right around him that we both definitely started looking more favorably towards than Anthony Volpe. All right, a player this offseason that the Yankees traded for, a big splash, Cody Bellinger heads to the Bronx. Bellinger's a guy that's kind of disappointed in the underlying metrics in recent years. Some may say overachieved in the underlying metrics. Now he gets a short porch where you can underachieve and still be very successful. So it's got people very excited for Cody Bellinger. And that has seen his ADP go up to 120 in December, as high as 93, Ben. I still have not clicked the Cody Bellinger button in NFBC formats. It's appealing, but then when I see his ADP go up, it becomes less appealing again to me. So how are you feeling on Cody Bellinger? Because I can sit back as an innocent bystander and go, yes, I agree the short porch is great. But I also agree, I've seen Cody Bellinger enough to realize I don't think he's that good still. So where are you at on Cody Bellinger?
Well, you mentioned his ADP rising. So I'm currently in a DC as we speak, and it hasn't finished yet. So it's not showing in the ADP data, but Cody went in the fifth round. I was very shocked. I mean, I would have taken Cody at the right price, but someone was very interested.
He went in round seven in mine.
All right, yeah, so someone's a big Yankee fan in my draft, I think. Yeah. I mean, I think I may have switched him, Cody, I may have flip-flopped him with someone in my first base rankings after the signing. He's not the Cody Bellinger of old. I think everyone knows that now, but he is dual eligible, so that helps a lot. First base, outfield. But even so, the underlying metrics, the 6.3% barrel rate's pretty poor. A hard hit of 32.4%, XBA only 245. His X-slug just hit 400, average exit velocity below 88 miles per hour. So there's a lot of bad things, but he'd still proved that he was fine. He missed some time last year, Cody, because of injury. I think he had a broken bone, so it was kind of fluky. He's never going to be the Dodgers Bellinger, but he could be a 20, 24 homer, 10, 15 steal guy, batting fifth for the Yankees. He's going to score a lot of runs. He'll drive in plenty with Judge and maybe stand ahead of him. Or actually, Goldschmidt's ahead of him now, probably. So it's definitely a great. So that's why I like Cody. It's more of the situation, and that he's shown that he can be productive, even though the skills have really fallen off a cliff for him. So I like him. But I'm not going to reach for him in the fifth round. I like him around pick 100, and I have him ranked in that range too. So I'm definitely all about Cody, and with the way and the flexibility, like I said, it's really nice because there's not many. I feel like there's fewer multi-positional eligible players this year, at least in the NFBC. So if you can catch one or draft one at any point, it's definitely helpful.
I should be more optimistic on Bellinger. I get that I'm not, and maybe things will continue to change as draft season changes. As we've talked about before, a lot in the ADP changes, player evaluations change, so many things throughout the offseason. So maybe things will change. But as of now, I've really never been a Cody guy, and I'm not really changing my stances just yet. But I'm always able to be persuaded, to put it that way. So we'll wait and see how that goes. As our good buddy Ryan Bloomfield says, oldie. Paul Goldschmidt, Mr. Oldie, was signed by the New York Yankees on a one-year deal. I like the deal. I wish the Giants would have done it, honestly, for the price you guys paid for that. 22 homers, 11 steals last year. That's 11 or more steals in three of the last 4 years. He's hit at least 20 home runs every year since 2014, all but 1 year prior to that. Average was down a bit for Goldschmidt. They talked about his fastball abilities not catching up to the fastball. But he played well in the second half, at least much better, let's say, in the second half compared to the first half. I like the move. ADP 194 in December, as high as 169. If you wait on first base or you want CI, I don't mind it at all. What's your thoughts on Paul Goldschmidt?
Yeah, I actually took him in this draft I just mentioned. I'm a fan of Goldschmidt, especially at this price. I didn't think I'd be in on him when I began my prep, but as I looked at the underlying metrics, I was kind of impressed despite the poor season that he had. He only hit 245. His XBA, though, was 255, which is kind of more palatable. And if he gets a little lucky, maybe it's like a 265 range. He still stole 11 bags last year. Goldschmidt had 22 homers, so that's definitely a little low for him. But the barrel rate was still 73rd percentile, 10.7%. His average exit velocity was 91.2 miles per hour. His hard hit was 92nd percentile. So there's still a lot to like in the underlying profile for Goldschmidt. And I mean, he's going to hit fourth, so he has Judge right ahead of him, Jazz, maybe Volpe, and the aforementioned Bellinger hitting behind him. So I think, looking at the fastball data, though, on StatCast, versus four seamers, he had a 262 XBA, actually, so that's not terrible. He did strike out 27% of the time, though, against four seamers last year, up from 24.7 in 2023, and the XBA was 271 in 2023, so they kind of went in the wrong directions, I guess. And so to your point, it's definitely shown in the data, but he's still good enough of a hitter. And like I said, he had 11 steals, 11 the year before that. So he's not the fastest anymore, but he's smart enough to steal. And that's kind of why I took him, because I was trying to get steals wherever I could. And as a first baseman projected for maybe high single digits, that's more than nothing. It's definitely helpful in the grand scheme of things when you're building your team. So, and also he's kind of like the end of a cliff with first base.
Good point.
Yeah. He's kind of, like you mentioned, he's at the back end of the 100s, and there's definitely people that we like, cause we did the first base show a couple weeks ago, and there's definitely post 200 first baseman that we like, but they're more CIs and goals. That's why I took Goldschmidt as my first baseman, cause I didn't want to mess around with those CI options as my starting first baseman. So.
Yeah, just scrolling the ADP, like Yandy Diaz goes a few picks later and then drops all the way to 234 to CES. And then it drops. I'm doing just first baseman, Mountcastle at 244. Like there's a big cliff, like you mentioned. And those guys, at least we know Goldie, barring an injury, pretty much plays every day for the Yankees. I don't see that changing, where some of these other guys might be like in a platoon or other situations as well. So I'm a fan. I know I have a few shares already. I was enjoying the discount. I still don't mind 169, 170. I'll still take that. I'm curious to where it lands in another month as we keep doing drafts and more news comes out. Next, you know, Yankees taxes start getting thrown around everywhere in drafts, which does happen. That definitely happens. So we'll see how that plays out. All right. I know nothing about catchers, so I'm going to let you have the floor on this one. A guy that I picked up in a lot of places last year. I had in DCs last year as like my third or fourth catcher. Was really good for a while until he wasn't, but should be the starting catcher for the Yankees. And I think it pretty good run with Jose Trevino getting traded out of town. That is when Austin Wells, who has an ADP bin of 197 in December, as high as 173, is going right around Goldie. What are your thoughts on Wells? Because like, I think I'm kind of biased on Wells, and I need someone to either back it up or temper me that knows the situation like you do.
No, I agree. I was a big fan of Wells, especially going to last year as a upside catcher too. And I don't think I really had him anywhere. I did add him in season, I think on a team or two when he was playing more often, because they were hesitant to give Wells the job. The Yankees, they always liked Trevino, but now, like you mentioned, he's gone. He was traded to Cincinnati. And because of that, it seems like Wells has a shot to be a full-time catcher, because he was probably the earliest catcher I had ranked that was in a platoon, at least per roster resource, their projections. But I think it's kind of with good intent, because if you look at his career, Wells has a 767 OPS versus right-handed pitchers, but versus lefties, it's only 530, but that's only 66 at bats. I mean, excuse me, that was last year, it was 2024. So still a pretty over a 200 point difference in OPS. But when you're looking at less than 80 plate appearances versus lefties, you can't really say a lot. I mean, he didn't even play that much in 2023 either when he first got called up. Yeah, he only had 70 at-bats total that year, and it's only six versus lefties. So he's really young when it comes to his MLB experience. And he has some pretty good Statcast data. His xSlug was 429, which was 67th percentile. His barrel rate was 60th percentile. He walks a lot. Not the slowest guy either. He had 31st percentile sprint speed. Excuse me. And he kind of tails off at the end, but I think I still like him. And I was hoping going into this draft season that he would be priced a little bit lower, but everyone else likes him too. I think also because catchers as a whole struggled a lot last year, and Wells has some good upside. He's a big hitting prospect for the Yankees. So I like him. I thought about drafting him in my current DC. I passed on him because the average is a risk with him. So if you take Wells, I would make sure you can't really afford another low average. My team couldn't really, I didn't think I could risk that too much. So that's why I passed on him. But if you're like a projected close to 260 as a team average or above that, I think Wells as your catcher too is a great pick.
Yeah, I think he's a great catcher too. One thing I liked last year, especially even when he struggled, even in the postseason to the detriment of a lot of Yankees fans, they still hit him like in the middle of the order. They still trusted him, which might've been the wrong move in the postseason. Even I can say that with my biases, but the fact they trusted the youngster and they knew that there was power there, like, hey, let's roll with this. Maybe he'll find it. I liked that angle. They trade Trevino, gets me even more excited on the Wells angle. So yeah, I'm a fan. Good catcher too, in my mind. I'm very optimistic on him. So I'm hoping that he continues to develop in the right direction. And the whole lefty thing, I'm always been a fan that they need to give young players like a full run against lefties before they can reevaluate. And you mentioned it was a short sample. Like I hate hearing it in general, but then as a Giants fan, they said that about Brandon Belt for years. Then they played Belt. And he might not have as much power, but his OBP was better. Like, these guys can still be productive in their own ways. And I think there's a lot to be said about that. So we'll see how it goes. But yes, big Austin Wells fan over here. Big Austin Wells fan. All right, another player that is beyond tilting these days, but at least he's older. He's 35. He's one of the veterans on this team. Goldie is the veteran now. But you got Giancarlo Stanton, Ben. Last year hit 233, which is the best he's hit since 2021. So that's an improvement. He had 27 homers, which is, you know, pretty good. 114 games, the most since 2021. That's also kind of a tongue-in-cheek, oh no. But the thing with Giancarlo Stanton now, it's util only. ADP's 320, as high as 265 in December. So in the past, Ben, he cost you like a top 150-ish pick in the past. Now it's like double that around there. So are we in on Giancarlo, or is it just like, you know what, there's so many better gambles to take later on than Giancarlo?
I think in a DC I am, because you're going to have a big bench, and hopefully you have enough players that you could sub in case something happens. Because with having a util only player, it does limit your flexibility, of course. But Stanton, I mean, the way he ended the year was awesome. If we're talking regular season, though, 27 homers was great. He's got close to 30 again. He improved the average by 40 points, went from 191 to 233. So still bad, but not as bad. Especially at this point in the draft. And I had a tweet out. I posted on Twitter. I did post on Blue Sky as well. I forget if I actually showed the data, but if you look at just exit velocity, barrel percentage, hard hit, XBA, XSlug, and XWOBA, and hit the names, you wouldn't be able to tell, maybe with Ohtani because of the XBA, but between Ohtani, Ozuna, Rooker, Schwarber, and Stanton, all util-only players, you probably couldn't tell who's who. That's how good Stanton's year was with the power metrics. And even if you included contact percentage, because Stanton's wasn't very good at 68.5, but those guys were all around 70 as well overall. The K rates were almost comparable to Rooker and Schwarber. Theirs were a little bit lower, but still pretty poor, all around 30. So Stanton, power-wise, is as good as those other util-only bats. But the thing is, of course, the average is going to be a killer, and he gets hurt a lot. He still got hurt a little bit last year, I believe, Stan. He only had 417 at-bats. So that's also something that concerns me, and that's why I'm not so gung-ho about drafting him. But if you need power at this point in the draft and your util spot is open, definitely go for it. He's 35 now, so as you mentioned, he's not getting any more younger or flexible like when they did the yoga thing, him and Judge. It seems to have paid off. But, if you're desperate for power and you can afford the average hit and you have some good flexibility, there's a lot of ifs, but that's what it comes with Stanton now. I think he's a great pick in that range, and I'll be open to taking him myself, but not this draft.
Yeah, no, I'm more, it's more appealing to me in years past. I also look back, like, in a DC, you don't want more than one utility-only guy usually. Like, yep. You can, but you usually don't. So, like, after him, you know, you got your Jocks, you got your Manzardos. There's a handful of guys that we like as well. So I'm not, like, making a point to get Stanton, but I get it. If you need power and if somehow he runs in, like, 130 games, like, good God. Like, I'm not playing. I just want 100. Just give me 100-plus, and I'll take that in ADP of around 300, but we'll wait and see. All right, you know, most people do a podcast and they talk about a team and they rank like the most popular to the least popular and so on and so forth. But no, not on Benched with Bubba. We stop here, and before we talk about debates at third base and whatnot, the last main player I have down here is the Martian himself, the man that so many have been waiting for. One of the, like, I think it was 13 or 14 players we talked about, Ben, when Steamer came out, that is projected for 2020. Like, that says a lot there. Actually, it's down now. They lowered it to 18-18 in one of the latest updates. Still pretty good for a guy that's played no more than 14 games or 18 games at the big league level in one season. Jason Dominguez is who we're talking about. If you're clueless to this just yet, 22 years old, ADP of 152, as high as 123. Tons of hype behind this man, Ben. Should we be buying into it in 2025 for fantasy?
I love Dominguez. I'm glad they actually have a really good prospect for once. The thing, though, is that, I mean, when I started looking at 2025 data for prep for drafts and whatnot, Dominguez was projected to be like the fifth hitter for the Yankees, and now he's already down. He's down to eighth because of Cody Goldschmidt. Well, primarily those two guys signing or getting traded for, and which is fine. But I guess think so. We had the Volpe debate. I could see Dominguez being the leadoff hitter at some point because if you look at his walk rate in his brief stint last year in 18 games, 16.4% walk rate. And then like for the minors, like it's all it's most of his stops in the minors, Dominguez have had double digit walk rates. So he is probably the future leadoff hitter unless Volpe can make a change. But for now, I don't know that's going to happen. He's had his ups and downs. Dominguez has, he was like when he came up in 2023, he had four homers and a steal in eight games. So everyone was going crazy for that and struggled a little bit more with a 179 average this past season, 2024. But I think for me now, after the additions and where he's projected to hit in the lineup, I'm probably out on the ADP, unfortunately. Maybe I'll take a stab at one point just to switch it up because it would be cool to have him on a team. And I think the talent is there. I think he's going to be – like his sprint speed is fine, 64th percentile. Who knows if – well, he had so few opportunities as well, but he stole five times in his brief time in the majors last year. So he has the willingness to run. And StatCast also has the rolling ex-WOBA graph, and his was getting pretty hot at the end of the year. So he was starting to see the ball better, it looks like. And the refusal to play him over Verdugo was so frustrating as a Yankee fan because the Yankees are so stubborn.
Yep.
So they went out and traded for Verdugo. They're like, okay, this is our guy. He's going to play. He's a veteran. But he was, I mean, Dominguez, just let him play. Verdugo did nothing. I know his defense was okay, but so that was annoying. So I think they're committed to him finally now. He's going to be the left fielder. It's just the lineup position and how good he does to start. He's still only 21, which is kind of crazy. It's going to be his third taste of the majors, and he's only going to be 21, 22. So I like him. Not sure about the ADP, but I'll probably try to draft him at least once just to have him.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I have not clicked the button yet either. I always do towards the end of like February, depending on DCs and March for other drafts. I always do like one draft where it's like my FOMO draft, and I go get at least a handful of guys that I want, change my strategy up a bit. And Dominguez is definitely on that list. I think there's a lot there. It's one of those, is it next year or is it like 2 years from now that we see it? That's the million-dollar question with young players for me. But I like it. I like it a lot. All right, let's head to the hot corner, third base. There's a lot of situations here. You have Oswaldo Cabrera, who is on roster resource there. His ADP is 634, as high as 474. I've taken darts late. There's another option you're going to mention, and maybe some others that make sense. There's also the world where the Yankees spend money, and they either get a third baseman, a second baseman, and put Jazz to third. So there's a million moving parts here with third base. How do you see this playing out, or at least if we're drafting here in the next week or two, with what we know, how are you approaching the situation?
Well, I'm probably avoiding it for now. On the outline I wrote that I hope and think that they're going to trade or sign someone. I mean, that's been my expectation because at this point, I think we all know that Oswaldo Cabrera is not a full-time player. He's a great utility player. He's a switch hitter. He can play everywhere. So he's a perfect bench piece. He's just not a full-time player in my mind. He's been around for a few years now and hasn't really shown anything. He cost people some fab last year, though, because he had a huge hot start to the season, and then he kind of went back to the shell of what he's always been. So my preferred choice, if they don't make a move, is Oswald Peraza. I thought he was going to get the shortstop job going into 2023. They called up Peraza for the 2022 playoffs. In September, he had 306 in that short time in September. Had a homer, two steals in 18 games. I think he had 300 in the playoffs that year too, which was very eye-opening. So that's why I thought he was going to be given a shot over Volpe, but they liked Volpe a lot more. And unfortunately, Oswald Peraza has struggled in the last two seasons. I mean, he's barely played 56 total games, only four in 2024, and he's hit around less than 200 combined in those 56 games. But he hasn't had consistent playing time. I mean, if you look at the BABIP, it's been pretty low, but the K rate's high. But, I mean, if you're not playing consistently at the majors at that young of an age, you're going to struggle. So, and he's got power and speed, Peraza. Cabrera does too, but the ceiling isn't as high as Peraza, I don't think, with Cabrera. So I would like to see Peraza. But, yeah, I guess if Cabrera is there in a DC, okay, maybe draft him because he will play. And if someone gets hurt, he'll probably play full-time for at least a period. So I guess for that reason, Cabrera deserves to go higher than Peraza. But as a fan, I really would like to see Peraza get a shot.
And what you said, there's another reason why I didn't mind taking Cabrera when I was taking him. My idea is, well, if the Yankees, for some reason, Stan Patty plays third, sweet. At the same time, like you mentioned, he'll be the util guy. An injury takes place, he still plays a handful of games every year in a DC. That's going to be very relevant at some point in time. Peraza's interesting because, yeah, it wasn't too long ago we thought he'd be the dude. And then just things didn't pan out. They liked Volpe, then he struggled, like you mentioned. Peraza's ADP 733. Like, that's one of your last picks. That's a really strong last pick. You can take darts on prospects that haven't even shown up yet, or a guy like Peraza that in a vacuum definitely should get his taste, if that makes sense. So I like that shout out for Peraza. But in the end, I think you and I both agree the Yankees are going to make a move. I don't know if it's a second or if it's at third. They're going to make a move. Let's just be real about that one. Let's head to the mound.
Arenado, though. I don't want Arenado.
No, I still think it's Bregman. I really do. I know the rumors have gone Toronto, Detroit, Baltimore, whatever. I somehow think the Yankees still are not out on that situation just yet.
There may be a riot outside Yankee Stadium, though, if they sign Bregman.
No, that'll be beautiful.
There'll be trash cans burning and everything.
It'll be awesome. But, you know, all it's going to take is Jazz walking through there and going, yo, because they love Jazz. No matter what, Jazz talks all the trash in the world. He was on Twitter today talking trash to someone's Hall of Fame boat. It was awesome. Like, he doesn't care. That. And they just keep embracing him more and more in the Bronx. So if Jazz just rolls into town with Bregman, everything's good. Party's over. Like, that's all it's going to take. And that's how teams work. And that's all. Like, the whole member, I had a sidetrack. Like, when the Carlos Correa thing, when he went into Minnesota and that was during the Twins run also, that whole thing. And he says, all we did is we went in the shower as men and we talked about it and we were good. That's what you wish, but that's how teams work.
I forgot about that quote.
Yeah. Teams. That's just how teams operate. So I think teams, Bregman will help a team like the Yankees, to say the least. All right, let's head to the mound here and let's talk about one Gerrit Cole, who I call it, they restructured his deal. Like, this was always kind of the plan, it feels like, when it was put together. But Cole's back, obviously an injured-riddled 2024 season, a season that saw him pitch well but not dominate as often like the Gerrit Cole. He's getting older, and his ADP right now are close to 60, as high as 42. Definitely the lowest we've seen Cole in a long time, Ben. How are you feeling on Gerrit Cole? Because I'll be honest, I have not clicked his name once yet.
Me neither. Well, in my only one draft, I have not taken Cole. I probably won't either. So I have him as my 26th starting pitcher with an overall rank of 98. I am not drafting Gerrit Cole this year. I'm scared by the elbow. Yeah, he came back, but he never got surgery to fix it. It seemed like an injury that probably could have warranted Tommy John or internal brace or whatever variant of that they chose to have. And even now, so on the show, I've mentioned pitchers like Corbin Burns, Aaron Nola with their declining K skills. Add Gerrit Cole to the list. So in 2021, his first full year at the Yankees, he had let's go by percentage. He had a 33.5% K rate, went down to 32.4, then 27, and this year was 25.4. And when combined with a little elevated walk rate, he had a 17.9% K-minus walk, which is definitely not Gerrit Cole. Like, he's been in the upper 20s, even above 30 one year with the K-minus walk percentage. The velocity has gone from 97.8 in 2021 all the way down to 95.9 this past year. The xFIP was almost 4, 399. The xERA, 359. The FIP, 369. I think that Sierra is pretty elevated too. Sierra was 379. And the swing strike, so this kind of confirms the K issues. His swing strike rate went from, like, his first full years with the Yankees, 2021, 2022, 14.5, 14.3 with a swing strike rate, down to 11.7 and then 10.7 in 2024. So I just think he's due to have a rough year unless he somehow, like, rehabs further in the offseason. But, I mean, he came back as a full-time pitcher, so I don't know. I'm assuming he was fully healthy, but at this point, if he is fully healthy, he's not the same pitcher anymore. And I was going a lot off of, like, K rates in my pitcher analysis this offseason because of how important it is. I found with a success in terms of fantasy. And for that reason, I don't trust Cole right now. I need to see him bounce back, and I don't want to take that risk with a guy who was out with an elbow injury, and he's had a lot of mileage on that elbow in the past few years. So I'm going to fade Cole. I hope he does well for the Yankees, of course, but for fantasy, I don't want a piece of him.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, I still think he'll be very serviceable. Like, maybe he's more Logan Webb. Like, he'll get you okay ratios, but we talked about Webb strikeouts decline, Burns, like, you already threw him out there. He could be like all those guys, and most of those guys we are not drafting. We've talked about that already. So it's really, and what I'm really worried about is we saw the arm issue finally. You mentioned the mileage on the arm, getting older. Is this like a DeGrom situation in the making? Is it like Scherzer's more back related, but you just get older and injuries just continue to pile up. That's just how things eventually go when you get worked as hard as those guys do. So again, I don't want to see Cole fail as a baseball fan. He's awesome. When he's on, it's great. As much as I hate the Yankees because they're like they're the East Coast Dodgers or the Dodgers of the West Coast Yankees. You decide Yankees are still great for TV. They're still great for baseball. So I'm not stupid in that regard. So yeah, I want Cole to succeed. You guys, I said earlier, have been active this offseason, and it was like just a couple days after Juan Soto said peace, Max Fried becomes a New York Yankee, which was a big move, big splash. I know we talked about it before. The amount of years is my biggest problem with that, but we don't really care about that right now. We're worried about 2025 on this show. That's all we care about. I've always been a Fried guy. He's always kind of scares us with a little injury here and there, but in the end, still has a pretty solid season. If you do like Max Fried, though, ADP 101 as high as 70. He goes from 70 to 121, so a wide gap in where Max Fried's been getting drafted. How do you look at Max Fried this year?
Yeah, well, relative to where I've been on Fried in the past, nothing lower now. I'm actually pretty in line with his ADP. Ironically enough, I have Cole and Fried back-to-back, so I have Fried as my 27th starting pitcher right now. I've had Fried on multiple teams, I think, since 2022 each year. He's very underrated. I think when we talked about the signing on a bench with Bubba, I mentioned that the stat I heard is that Fried has the best ERA combined over the last five seasons in the majors. And when you look at his year-by-year breakdown, it's only 2 years above three. One was 304, and this past year was 325 for his ERA. So he's, I believe that stat. And one thing I never really realized was with Fried, which really helps a lot with how he pitches because he's not a high strikeout pitcher, is the ground ball rate. I know Ryan's brought that up a few times. Also, ironically, when they didn't have an infield, the Yankees, so where all these ground balls going to go. But now they've kind of fixed that. And so I'm more concerned now because of the forearm issues. It's been a couple of years of it. Fried had that awful start in 2024. I think in his first two starts, he had a combined not even three innings or something like that. It was pretty ugly. I was pretty annoyed because I had him on a few teams again. But in terms of velocity, he's right where he's been, 94.2 last year on the fastball. It was 94.2 the year before. The 2 years before that, it was 94. So he's right. It's very consistent, which is kind of impressive. But the walks did increase last year. They went from a 5.8% walk rate in 2023 to 8% last year. So that's a little concerning. The K-minus walk was only 15.3%. That's even worse than Cole's. So that's a little concerning as well. Fried kind of has got the job done somehow. He did have his great starts, but I mean, the swing strike rate decline, it's even lower than Cole's. It was 10.2%. It was closer to 12 the other two seasons before that. So this is why I'm a little bit more down on Fried, but I didn't go down enough where I'm not going to draft him. So I would just say be cautious with Fried because of the form, like I said, and the skill decline. But I mean, in terms of wins, he's pretty safe because he was always a great win source on the Braves, and with the Yankees, he should be as well. And the short porch to left, and it's actually, well, it is short to left as well. People don't really say that, but to right generally affect him because of the ground ball rate. Like I said, just be cautious. And he's definitely more of a SP3 now than when he was like an SP1, SP2 before.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He's an SP2, SP3. Do not make him your ace. If you wait on pitchers, mm-hmm. like if he's sitting there and someone else, go elsewhere. I think I had in the draft I'm in now, he was there with like Peralta and a couple other guys. I took Peralta. I'm like, I'm going that direction. And so you just got to, he makes for a good 2-3, not your ace, though, just because of the volatility, in my opinion. It sounds like Ben's kind of on board with that as well. All right, another lefty who has had arm issues in the past but has shown himself to be pretty formidable as well is Carlos Rodon, coming off 175 innings last year after a down first year in the Bronx, bounced back nicely, ERA below 4, which was a plus. We saw the strikeout rate up to 26.5%. He was, honestly, after kind of a slow start, it felt like Carlos Rodon started to figure things out again. ADP is 120 right now, Ben, going from 107 to 143. How do you assess Carlos Rodon? Because to me, out of the first three we've talked about, might be the best bang for the buck out of for the Yanks.
Yeah, I had Rodon in the main event last year, and I was very upset with how it went. I'm kind of in line. I'm 134th overall in my overall rankings, and his ADP was like around that. I think he's what you said. I want to look at his month-by-month splits because I heard – I think it may have been CBS talking about Rodon and how he got better as the year went on. I mean, really – so it was really the summer. In June, he had a 7.76 ERA, July a 4.05 ERA, August a 4.15 ERA. And June and August, the whips were 1.38 and 1.58. So that was pretty rough. So yeah, so something happened in the summer. But also, too, with Rodon, he's a very fly ball heavy pitcher, and the ball flies in the summer, as we all know. He had a 49.4% fly ball rate last year. This is a 33% ground ball rate. And I think because of that, he's always going to have a high ERA. That used to be the issue with Cole. He'd kind of have a high ERA because of all the fly balls that he gave up. So, like, the xERA was over 4. The xFIP was over 4. The FIP, of course, was over 4. Sierra was below 4, 3.78. So I think that's probably more because of the strikeouts, how many he accumulated last year. His K percentage was 26.5%. So it bounced back nicely after the first year, which was a disaster. So it's definitely a step in the right direction compared to his debut with the Yankees in 2023. But Rodon, for me, is he's an SP4 for me, where Fried was an SP3, if I want to go pitcher heavy. But, yeah, like I said, I had the poor taste in my mouth. It's not just because of a Yankee fan. I had him, like I said, in the main event. And it was a very bumpy road. And I think it's going to be the norm for Rodon now. I don't think he's the same stud that you had when he was in San Francisco or even that last year with the White Sox. But he's fine. It's like, if you have pretty good ratios and you need the K boost, I think he makes sense, but I'm going to try to not take him too often, I don't think.
Yeah, I've always been kind of scared just to take him because the injuries history has always concerned me, and then inconsistencies. But again, two out of the last 3 years, they've been quite serviceable, all things considered. So I can't really complain that much when we talk Carlos Rodon. All right, with the addition of Max Fried, you now have potentially 6 starting pitchers. So I'm going to group these three together, talk about him, all of them or one of them, or I don't care, however you wish. But you have the defending AL Rookie of the Year in Luis Eel, who's actually been kind of quietly rumored in trade deals. I think you have to like really knock the socks off to make that one happen. Eel's ADP is 194. You have Marcus Stroman, who was a massive disappointment, but they paid the man. Sometimes you follow the money here, folks. ADP of 605. And then you have Clark Schmidt, came back from late in the season off the IL, ADP of 212. How do you attack this, the final, like back two, I guess, of the Yankees rotation?
Yeah, I think Roster Resource has, Stroman as the fifth option, if I'm not mistaken.
They have all 6 down right
now. Oh, they updated, yeah. So this is one where I'm pretty sure they're not going to go 6 man.
No.
I think personally that Stroman's the odd man out. He should be. Unfortunately, he's the highest paid of the three. But with the Yankees, I don't know. Well, like I was saying with Verdugo, they love to keep their guys. So I think it's kind of a Cashman thing. He's very arrogant. Go back to that interview he had a couple years ago or a year ago, if you're not familiar with him. With Stroman, he was just so bad. He stopped getting strikeouts, only 113 in 154 innings last year. I mean, he never was a strikeout pitcher, but he had a lot of walks, which was never his thing, and it was just awful. But of the three, I'm highest on Schmidt. So I have him and Heel flip-flopped in terms of where I have them ranked versus how ADP has them. Schmidt is a little concerning, though, because of the durability. I think he never really had a full year, and he was pitching the best he ever pitched last year, though, and I had him on a DCN, so I was kind of benefiting from that. But he only had – well, actually, his first full year as a starter was 2023. He went 32 starts, but only 159 innings, so a short leash when he was out there. And the ERA and the WHIP were pretty poor, 4.64, 1.35. But something changed last year where in 85 innings, he had a 2.85 and a 1.18. I'm not sure if there's a pitch mix change on how it's up right now, but I'm not going to look for it. So I like Schmidt. I mean, he definitely improved. The walk rate was not terrible from what I'm looking at right now, but it's just more of the volume and how he comes back. He did pitch though after he was hurt and he started. So that was pretty promising for me to be confident that he's going to be a starter for them, because they had a ton of starters at that point when he came back, because Heel had been hurt. They had Nestor still. And I think Stroman was still in the rotation too. So they put Schmidt in there. So I think he's the safest. When it comes to Heel, I'm not as high because of how poor the underlying skills are. Namely, his walk rate is pretty atrocious, at least for a starter. And there's too many Luises in Fangraphs. Mm-hmm. Let me get up Luis Heel. Yeah, his walk rate was 12.1%. Even though he had a high K rate, Heel amounted to a 14.8% K-minus walk.
Great. Yeah.
No, I think he started out not walking guys, but in his career, he's always had a walk problem. So it kind of just came back. So at the tail of caution, because you may see a change in a pitcher and he reverted right back to who he was. And on top of that, he's a fly ball pitcher, which when you see him pitch, he has that sinker. So it's kind of surprising that Heel gives up fly balls more than he does ground balls. So with the walks and the fly balls, I have him ranked where I hopefully will not be drafting Heel. So I'm thinking it's going to be Clark, Schmidt, and Heel in the rotation. I hope it is, as a Yankee fan. And for fantasy, I hope it's Schmidt. Otherwise, I'm not too interested in Heel or Stroman right now.
Yeah, I've been out on Heel just because that K-to-walk scares the snot out of me, and just the volatility. Because there's just that thing, you mentioned it, with Verdugo and company, like they paid Stroman. Like I get to see some weird world where he's their fifth starter. He's ADP of 605. Take the dart. Schmidt's the best out of the bunch. I'm with you on that as well. So pretty much all in simpatico on those ones. Let's head to the bullpen here. Another move the Yankees made this offseason. They went and acquired Devin Williams from the Milwaukee Brewers. That's a big boy move. So he's obviously the lockdown closer, barring something crazy happening. How else do you assess this situation? Because I love what Luke Weaver did to finish the season. I have a few shares before the Williams trade. You have Ian Hamilton coming back. You have the Johnny Lasagna, Loisiga, coming back eventually. Like, there's a lot going on in that Yankees bullpen. Like, it's a scary team. That's why Stroman, if you can be the fifth starter and just throw five innings and not get destroyed, that bullpen's fine. So how do you assess the other options besides Devin Williams, who's still elite?
We'll see what happens when you don't spend $700 million on a single player, Bubba. You can actually make a lot of good moves that help everywhere else.
That's why all the Yankees fans that were mad, I'm like, guys, think about it. You got to build a team here. Like, you have to build a team. Just be happy.
It's going well so far,
So far, so good, yes.
I will say about Williams, though, this is kind of biased. I have him as my closer one right now, but all in range with Hader and Class A. He's closer to Edwin Diaz, but Diaz, he came back and was kind of a nightmare last year. He's getting older, so I would prefer Williams, Hader, or Class A. But even with Class A, though, he doesn't strike out as many people as the other closers in this range do. He struggled in the playoffs. He had issues with his velocity last year. And Hader's always, like, pitching like his hair's on fire. And there's a lot of it, so it could really affect him if it did catch on fire. But so I think Williams, we talked about his back issue, the injury. It was a bone, like a broken bone or something, or a stress reaction, which doesn't sound the best, but it's better than an arm issue. So I'm pretty confident that Williams will bounce back and should be plenty of save opportunities for the Yankees. So I like him as my RP1. And then he kicked out Luke Weaver, unfortunately. I know you were a big fan of drafting Luke Weaver. You're upset when I add him to the outline. But Luke Weaver is one of the elite, I think, spec closers for draft and holds right now. Because if something happens with Devin Williams back again or another injury, because he throws so hard, I think Weaver would be an RP1 if he were to give him the shot to close for an extended period of time. And then the last two names I'll just mention real quickly are Ian Hamilton, who I had a lot on a couple of drafting holes last year. He's kind of like their long man. He'll go multiple innings. He had some injuries last year, so his final stats weren't the best for Hamilton. He had like a 3.82 ERA. But the year before that, look at his stats. He was pretty dominant. He's still less younger than 30. And if one of the two are hurt, Williams and Weaver, and one's unavailable, Hamilton could get a save maybe. I think he's great for like a 49th, 50th pick in the DC if you just want a reliever. And then Fernando Cruz was the spec in Cincinnati before he was traded for in the Trevino deal. He had 109 Ks in 66 innings, albeit he had a 4.86 ERA last year, but the K numbers are great, and he was the handcuff for Alexis Diaz and a lot of people, I think, before he got traded. So, yeah, so I'm looking at Williams, Weaver, Hamilton, and Cruz from the bullpen for the Yankees.
Yeah, I like that. There's tons of options. You mentioned Cruz, who got traded over in that deal, another move that they made, which is just great for the Yankees. So lots and lots of bullpen options there, and we just don't want Devin Williams to go down, but just in case. They have life, and even some of those guys you mentioned, as they keep falling in DCs, there will be tons of viability to them as well. All right, let's talk prospects, though. You mentioned it's nice to have a young player in Jason Dominguez, the Martian. You still have a pretty good farm system. Like, even Austin Wells was technically a prospect recently. Like, there are pieces. Luis Eel just won the Rookie of the Year, for crying out loud. Like, you have young players. Who should we maybe be looking at here in 2025?
Yeah, I wrote down five names just to mention. I'll mention the two least important real quickly, but some may already know of the one, and that's Ben Rice. If there's an injury to Goldschmidt, who is pretty old, Rice would probably be the first baseman, or Oswaldo Cabrera, depending on what they do with third base. And Rice did get called up last year. He kind of struggled, but he had pretty good barrel rate. So he's kind of interesting. I think he probably lost his catcher eligibility, though, so maybe not as interesting anymore. And the other one I'll mention quickly is Yorbit Vivas. He came from the Dodgers a couple years ago. I forget what trade, but he's a middle infielder. I think he's like a speed guy. I don't see him getting called up unless there's like an injury. He could get traded, though. And then, well, the big one, you mentioned Jason Dominguez, and these two were kind of paired together, and that's Spencer Jones.
Yep.
Unfortunately, Jones had a rough year last year, I believe. He had problems with strikeouts from what I heard. And I mean, he's like Judge size. So, imagine having Stanton, Judge, and Jones on the team together, would be pretty crazy. I think he's still a pretty good prospect, though. He's only 23. Looking up his baseball reference, he made it to Double A only last year. He had 17 homers in 122 games with a .259 average. So for a big prospect, you'd like better numbers. He does steal, though. He had 25 steals. I didn't realize he was that fast. So he definitely has a good fantasy profile. Jones does. If he gets called up, but I don't think we'd see him this year unless there's an injury. Hopefully not. And then the last two I put down are pitchers who I was in on last year in DCs. I think the better name is Will Warren.
Yeah.
He may have been called up at one point. And the other one,
he had a couple cups of coffee last year for sure.
Yeah. And the other one who I ended up drafting because the price was cheaper was Chase Hampton. And recently in the beat reporter email that came out for the Yankees yesterday, they actually mentioned Hampton as a prospect to watch. And he got hurt last year. He had an elbow injury in spring training that delayed his season until July. And then he had another injury until his lower body in August. But Cashman mentioned him in the winter meetings, and the article says he brought him up on his own. So no, the reporter didn't even ask about Hampton. Cashman just brought him up. So if there's an injury to the pitching staff and Stroman's either already in the rotation or he's gone, I think Warren and Hampton are the two first in line to replace somebody.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Warren right now. He's a guy that, if you like taking chances, ADP 661, as high as 569. So it's definitely a nice later dart. Like, the big reason I like that is because, like you said, he actually had a cup of coffee. He could be the seventh or eighth option, and that'll happen. Every team will go through 7, 8, 9 options every year in the rotation. That's the reality. Spencer Jones, I'm waiting for, but with all the moves they've made, it's like, when's the time? Like, we might be waiting another year for Jones or even get traded type thing. That's the two scenarios there. So bright side is you have a lot of options, and you just won the AL, and you're probably the favorites to win it again this year. So with that being said, Ben, what are your expectations for 2025, non-fantasy-wise, but in reality, for the New York Yankees?
Yeah, you kind of said it, Bubba. I expect them to go back to the World Series. Hopefully the Dodgers aren't in there again. They did not match up pretty well with them last time. But, yeah, I like what they've done so far, like I said, despite not getting Soto, which I when they traded for Soto, I was hoping that knowing that he was not a given to return, I really hope they would win the World Series because then if he did walk, okay, we got what we wanted. We got the championship and he's gone. Okay, that's a just, but like we know it didn't go that way exactly. But I love the lineup. Even though Goldschmidt's old, I think he still has something left in the tank. Like I said, I think Cody's a great real life player for them to have. He provides flexibility. He can play the outfield or first base. So yeah, I expect them to do really well again. And based on how they look, I think they will. And especially with Devin as the closer now. So it's been a good offseason. Hopefully they make one more move like we were talking about with the third base or second.
Yep. It's looking good. Looking good in the Bronx, my friend. And I think when we talk throughout the season, you'll be very happy with what's going on. That's for sure. But all right, we'll wrap it up there. Make sure y'all follow Ben on the Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. He'll still be joining me weekly on everything else. But coming up tomorrow, you'll be listening to this on Monday, hopefully, or after you listen to this, whatever day of the week you listen to it on, the Tampa Bay Rays are coming to town with the one and only Jason Collette. So get ready for that as well. But again, follow Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. Follow me on Twitter at @BDentric. And for now, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 711, your 2025 New York Yankees team preview. Catch you all next time.